Good morning, everyone. My name is Ekaite Joseph Isang, and I am a Health Systems Integration Program Fellow hosted by the Kentucky Department for Public Health. I'd like to acknowledge the presence of my mentor. He's in the room, Dr. Douglas Thurman. He's a CDC Career Epidemiology Field Officer, a captain with the United States Public Health Service, and the Deputy State Epidemiologist for the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So, I took the trouble so that if I stutter when you ask me questions, you can look in that direction. This morning, we'll be looking at the process that the Commonwealth of Kentucky used in creating her data release policy and how privacy, confidentiality, and privacy come into play in public health, and discuss specifically how HIPAA applies to public health. Public health has enjoyed a historical relationship with data. All of our decision-making is based on the data we get. It's important that when you're sharing data, you balance privacy and confidentiality. You don't expose a patient's or a client's identity in the process of sharing data. We didn't have a harmonized data release policy in our agency, but different programs had their own data release policies, so it was pertinent that we created one that could serve as a baseline. I'm taking the trouble here to compare paper and electronic records, because as an informatics fellow, I always make a case for transiting from paper to electronic health records. I understand that there are initial costs, but when you look at the efficiency that comes with using electronic health records, you'll agree with me that it's time for everyone to move to electronic health records. And in the electronic era, because we've enjoyed a certain kind of efficiency, we expect that kind of efficiency when we're sharing our data, as opposed to the paper era where data requests would have long turnaround times from between 2 weeks to months. And so during the electronic era, you expect your data request to be filled at the touch of a button. I mean, go to a portal and get it, but it's not always that easy, hence the need for those policies. We have the same data sharing partners as pretty much other state health agencies, and these include our local public health departments, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, academic and research institutes. Our partners have varying needs according to what their focus is. It may be disease surveillance or research. I'd like to take this time to differentiate data sharing from data release. Often we use these two terms interchangeably, but they're not quite the same. With data sharing, the data steward still has control over his data. The data steward controls how this data is re-released subsequently. So if you want to use that data for secondary purposes, you've got to get back to the data steward to sign new data agreements. Whereas in data release, data is available for public use and the data steward no longer controls how that data is used. Let's look at what HIPAA says about confidentiality, privacy, and security. HIPAA was enacted in 1996, and it was principally for hospitals and healthcare systems. But because in public health, we also perform certain functions that define us as covered entities, some of the HIPAA rules apply to us. All covered entities must comply with HIPAA. And these covered entities are defined as organizations that electronically transmit health information under standards that are adopted by the United States Department for Health and Human Services. So healthcare plans, clearinghouses, physicians' offices are covered. Non-covered entities are entities that have access to protected health information, but do not directly use that for healthcare. So if you have an independent medical billing and coding company, they can see protected health information, but they are not covered. Public health, however, is considered a hybrid entity. Most public health agencies are hybrid entities because they have covered functions and they have non-covered functions. So when a public health agency has activities that are covered, say vaccinations, using an immunization registry, electronically sharing information between doctors' offices and the agency, those are covered functions, and so they must comply to HIPAA rules. Hybrid agencies have both models, and KDPH is a hybrid entity. In talking about data sharing, we like to look at confidentiality and privacy. And the key here is that confidentiality is the responsibility of the public health professionals or anyone who has access to patient information. How you access it, use it, share it. Privacy is the patient's right, how his or her information is used thereafter. We will also encounter a term called suppression, which is used when reporting aggregate data. And what that suppression means is when you're reporting your data in tables, some cells will have small numbers. You want to restrict the release of information in those cells to prevent patient re-identification. So our process, we examine different data release policies from programs across the agency, from other states. We went to the NCHS website, CDC Wonder, to see what other people were doing. We found that most people focused on the size of the population, the event counts, the geographical areas, relative standard error in the case of survey data, confidence intervals, and number of weighted records available. We decided to focus on population size counts for surveillance data and numbers of weighted records and the relative standard error for survey data. So when we brought that together, we tabulated it. The data release work group, which was created, we were about five of us, looked at the minimum standards we thought we could share data, decided that we would provide an algorithm for people to follow if they had data requests, sent it to an initial group of reviewers who started using it and gave us feedback on the things they wanted to see because we wanted this to be universally acceptable across programs. And so after that first testing, we brought it back for review, incorporated the suggestions, it went out for testing, and we sent it to the legal department. This just talks about the different data types you encounter. So these are our data release rules. When you receive an incoming data request, if it's for public health purposes, we follow our algorithm and we can release some identifiable information depending on what the user is. But for non-public health purposes, we send it to the legal department or an overall responsible person who determines whether or not it will be released. For our aggregate data, when we aggregate data, either for publishing or for sharing with other entities, we make sure that for populations of 1,000, we don't release data with cells 5 or less. We suppress those populations, those cells. But we go ahead and suppress the total count or the next adjoining cells so that there is no chance of back calculation. When we release data for rates that are less than 20, we mark it with an asterisk sign saying that this data may be a bit unreliable. Additionally, for survey data, we don't release data for weighted records less than 50, but if they are more than 50 weighted records with a relative standard error greater than 30%, we mark it with a sign, an exclamation sign, to say that this data should be interpreted with caution. We went ahead in our policy to include this algorithm, which just shows our data stewards what to do when they get data requests. So this algorithm is very easy for them to follow. They check if it's already published data, they release the data. But if it's not published, they go through the process of checking the population counts, checking the cell counts, suppressing what needs to be suppressed before release. The challenges we encountered were the varying protocols across programs. Some programs have different protocols, but we wanted something universal. And then their data storage models, we encountered that. We also found that a lot of people didn't understand how HIPAA worked. So when they got data requests, they weren't sure whether the HIPAA policies prevented them from releasing that data. So we took the time to let them know that we were a hybrid entity and sometimes we're not obliged to follow certain HIPAA rules. Deciding on a baseline to prevent re-identification was also difficult. Some people thought we should suppress data for cell counts less than 10. We looked at the universal policy and thought that was too stringent. If you're suppressing data for cell counts less than 10, you will end up releasing nothing. And then policies change all the time. What do we do when those policies change? So we thought, okay, we will send this data release policy for intermittent review to take care of changing policies. We concluded that having this policy made it easier to handle data requests. And this policy reflected in our 2015 HIV reports. When we looked at it, people were starting to use the policy in writing their reports. Having a data release policy prevented program managers from going back and forth to say, should I release, should I not release, just refer to the policy. But additionally, we allowed programs also decide to be as stringent as they wanted to be, depending on their program structure. We found that having that visual algorithm made it easier for people to follow. They would check it off. Is this 1,000 less? And so that made it easier. And actually, no one size policy fits all, but it's necessary that you have a baseline data release policy. Thank you.
Wonderful presentation. Thank you. I do have one question, which is that it seems to me the use of the relative standard error and some of the other components are related to statistical instability of the release, whereas some of the other issues are related to security and confidentiality.
Yeah.
They do overlap in an important way, but they're kind of conceptually unrelated. And I'm wondering what your thoughts were on sort of looking at them in the same process, or if that was addressed.
When we looked at it, we had the different programs wanting their own baseline data release policy to be incorporated. So we had a data release work group that looked at this policy, and yes, all of that was addressed because HIPAA insists that you take into consideration security, confidentiality, and privacy. So we wanted a data release policy that will address all those three components rather than have separate policies.
A quick question. Is your data release algorithm, that flowchart, is that available online?
Not yet. It's still awaiting approval from our legal department.
Okay. Well, I found it very helpful because it was just the other day we were talking about, like, if it was less than or equal to 5 that we suppressed the HIV numbers, or just less than 5. So I think it's really cool to have kind of like a guideline to go off of.
All right.
Which is really
you.
Helpful. And I know there's a public health lawyer in the room, so I won't disclose where I'm from.
Hope I can ask another question. I'm really into these presentations. Question on the HIPAA privacy rule, and I agree with everything you said, but my experience is that whether a health department is subject to the HIPAA privacy rule or not, it applies its standards with regard to de-identification and release of data. Simply because they don't have other standards or they don't have statistical experts to calculate the risk of re-identification. Under HIPAA, a county is considered an identifier, and public health always is releasing data by county. Do you have any process for, is there any process for actually calculating what is the risk of re-identification and anything with regard to public health release the data at a county level, or is that just because historically we have accepted that as an appropriate standard for public health data? And I hope that's not too much in the weeds.
No, it's not. So in Kentucky, we also have area development districts. So sometimes we could merge counties and release in according to area development districts. But if you go, I'm trying to go back to the algorithm. If that county has a population less than 1,000, then we're going to have to suppress it because it makes it easy to be identified. But when the population is greater than 1,000, then the risk of identification is less.